Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Friday, July 21st, 2000. In the fireside room this evening, we have Stacy Kitahata. Today's session number is KIS 2004. Today, Stacy is continuing her series, Diversity Dialogue. Today's title is The Color of Privilege. Let's listen in.
We're going to address just a few topics in the first chapter. How many people had a chance to read that first chapter? Okay.
Skinned it.
Okay, a couple of people, very good. How very conscientious of you. Of this book, Aida Hurtado's book called The Color of Privilege, Three Blasphemies on Race and Feminism. And she calls it three blasphemies. And we're not going to do all three. We're just going to look at a few of the topics that she begins to introduce in her first chapter. Because she says, and I thought it was interesting that a psychiatrist, a person who teaches at a state university in California, would pick a word like blasphemies, which I just associate with, you know, faith and religious.
What state university is she
teaching? She teaches at the University of California, Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yes. You could go visit her. You could ask her for a copy of the book because I ordered it for the bookstore, but it's back ordered. So, yeah, you could get us copies, right? Yeah, you're the closest, I bet. But anyway, that she wants to address some of the deepest aspects and the deepest assumptions that we have as people in the United States about what it means to be female and what it means to be white or what it means to be a person of color. And somebody asked how this relates or if this is going to be the same as the conversation that Larry's facilitating at 8:30. And here we'll talk specifically about this book and some ideas that Aida Hurtado brings out. And I'm really glad you're here because I read the book and I was telling Susan today, I thought, oh, I can't just read this book and think about these ideas myself. I want to talk with other people about them and see how they come to you and how they feel to you. So we'll bring in this board and spend a few minutes in, okay, thanks. I think three people maybe, two on the board and one on the, okay, good. We'll spend a few minutes in small groups looking at how we responded. And then I'll lay out just a few of the topics that she has in her first chapter that are maybe introduce the provocative aspects of her thought. Okay. I don't want to rush you. Take your time.
Don't hurry.
Okay.
Yeah.
So once we get all settled in, we'll have an opening prayer and look at some communication guidelines for tonight, this hour, and then maybe too, Larry, for later. We might want to talk about having some guidelines for how we speak with one another, because we'll talk about, as she suggests, some really things basic to us, our identity, our gendered identity, our racial identity, our relationships with one another. Oh, very good.
Girls cooperate, boys compete.
Well, that's right. Was it the girls who came up with the idea on how to do this and do
that? No, it was a
group. Okay.
You're good.
Okay. Thanks. The peace of God be with you all. Oh, most holy God, we celebrate that you have created us just as we are, that you called us into life and ministry to serve in the specific and special places where we are, in our families, in our churches, in our communities, in the tasks and work and student learning and employment that we have. Help us to celebrate with one another that calling and pour out upon us this hour your Holy Spirit of wisdom and understanding that we may appreciate and glorify you. Amen. So for our conversation, being that this is such a, I was thinking about this today, how everybody is so nice here, and I think it's sort of that Minnesota nice is sort of around here a little bit because of so many people from Minnesota who are here and have this very congenial way of being. But to be explicit about how we'll be in communication today, you see the word down the side? What is that?
Respect.
Respect. Respect, right, good. Okay, this is very audience participation after dinner. So jump in and say these things as soon as you can. So we there are these seven different aspects that we'll honor for one another. Taking responsibility for what we say and how we feel about what we say or what other people say, okay? Owning that. Empathetic listening. It really is an exercise in listening, to hear one another deeply, where we're coming from and what's behind the stories that we tell. Sensitivity to different styles, that's different styles of living, different styles of communicating, different styles of expressing oneself. It may not be just verbally or in conversation. Ponder. This is in the center of all of our communication, that we take the time to ponder what we're preparing to say or what we're feeling, what we hear other people communicate. Examine your perceptions and assumptions. That's really simple in the basic, but when someone speaks and realize, oh, I never thought of it that way before, or I always thought people like me were like this, those kinds of things. Confidentiality, that when we have conversation here, whatever conversation we have is for here, and not for, you know, coffee hour tomorrow. Tolerate ambiguity. I think that this is one of the themes for our conversation, that we are in the midst of a dialogue about what it means to be a woman and a man and to be white or a person of color in U.S. society. And we're not going to solve the problems or the questions right here in the next 15 minutes. And we will have a lot of questions for ourselves as well. Is that okay with everybody?
Yes.
Is there anything we missed or that we should add?
What was the last one I did?
Oh, tolerate ambiguity. Okay. Great. All right. Let's see what things. Growing up, what messages did you receive about being a boy or a girl, a woman, a man, male or female from these different sources? All right. From the family. Who cares? Does that mean what difference does it make? Does it make a difference? Is that what that means?
That meant that in the family, he had a boy and girls, but they're never seen.
Oh, okay. So within your family.
It didn't matter.
Okay. Within your family, it didn't matter. My father placed value on marriage. Okay. Be nice. Okay, that's good. Boys need college educating, but not girls. It's a woman's prerogative to change her mind. Okay, so that you learned that in your family. Boys can go back to school after lunch early. I had to do the dishes. Okay, that's good. That's really key because that tells you a lot about a lot of things. Another way to do this exercise is to say, what was the shape of your dining room table? We have to do this one. This is another one. And then where did each person sit? And what does that say to you? What did that tell you, even as a child, about people's roles? Favored, being the only girl. Oh, that's nice. Okay. Girls need boys to take care of them. Okay. Anybody else get that message? Okay. Beware of women, especially your grandmother.
No, it's my grandmother. She's the one that told me.
Oh, said be careful. All right. Interesting. Okay. There were expectations to be strong. Now, is this a boy who wrote that?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Needed to go to college. Try to stay out of trouble and be responsible for your actions. Okay. Female servants. Kind of the dishes thing here. You, a girl, can accomplish whatever you want. Okay, that's good. Some really positive things, some a little bit more restraining. In the church, I never noticed. Oh, I never noticed. Obviously, girls were better behaved. Good girls get married to good boys. Okay, lots of information in that, right? Serve. Boys could serve as acolytes, but not girls. Okay. So there's certain roles available to girls and boys, similar to this dishes and serving thing. So serve meant something different. Boys could become pastors. Okay. Always accepted. So somebody felt always accepted in church. Huh? Neuter? Is that the word? Okay, good girls don't have sex before marriage. Okay, two messages like that. Take care, no sex before marriage. Okay, I liked it before too. Take no sex before marriage. We were in the restaurant business. There was no time for church. Okay, all right, that's important. Yikes. Says it all, maybe. Church was good if you want to go, go. Oh, if you want, oh, church was good. If you want to go, go. Okay, good. In school, girls are smarter, boys are smarter, depending on where you are. Good girls are obedient, act ladylike. Someone was teased in school. Girls liked school. Girls are cute. Or girls act cute, is that what it is? Non-jock sissy. Oh, if you're not a jock, then you're a sissy. So a message again about role, right? Gender role. Girls can be smart. Boys get picked more often for answers. Okay, there you go. The girls can be smart, but boys get picked more often for the answers. Smart girls seemed unapproachable. Boy, okay, that's a whole nother hour at least, right? Boys were expected to take the lead. I was shy and it was difficult. Being well was important. Okay, that's good. Lots of things in there. Smart girls seemed unapproachable. I assume that means by boys. Boys were expected to take the lead. I was shy and it was difficult. Being well was important. Go, learn, do. Okay, that was a real active school message. What messages did you get from your friends? Only girls. Oh, you only had girlfriends, I guess. Is that what that means?
Yeah.
Boys didn't like smart girls. Okay, that's, we have two affirmations from, it looks like, two different people. Girls are silly. Girls were best friends. Looked to as a confidant. Is that girls are looked to as confidant? Or you as a?
Friends.
Friends were looked to as confidants. Okay, good. Had to prove myself as a woman, capable and strong as a man in any situation. Okay, and then we get a yes. Ditto on that. Girls like boys. We had 3 votes for that. Girls like boys. Yes, I like boys. Okay, that's a 4. If you were good at sports, you were cool. Okay? Here, if you're not a jock, you're a sissy. So that's sort of the opposite of that. I enjoyed having guy friends, but not many female friends. Is that a male person?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Boys and girls. Boys and girlfriends, mostly girls. Interesting that from here there were a lot of messages about girls in particular. Okay? All right. Well, I want to invite you then to, now that we've done that all as a group, so everybody heard kind of everybody's answers, to split out into little groups of about 5 people. That should do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I think we'll have like 3, and then there's 5 people up in the gallery.
Yeah.
And here I'll give you one. Two instructions. We've been using a process called mutual invitation. So some of you have done this before, where one person begins, and I invite the person who has the birthday earliest in the year. So you're not the person, is that it? You almost were the person, for sure. So whoever has the birthday early. begin. Introduce yourselves to one another, and then have a brief conversation about these messages that you got. And when I say the person who starts first, say it's Susan, because she was born on January 2nd. And after she shares, then she invites the next person, and the next person can pass if they want, if you don't choose to speak. If you pass, you still get to invite the next person, okay? Or if you speak, you invite the next person and go around, the zigzag across the group, and then that way we'll practice inviting and being invited. Okay? So, I have the watch. 5 minutes for that. So each person gets just a little bit less than a minute, all right? Okay, we're going to have to come back. I know you didn't complete your conversation, I'm sure. We could spend the whole time just on this little part, right? But I'm glad you had a chance to share. This gets it out so we could keep looking at this, and it gave us a chance to think before we wrote it out, so we didn't have to talk as long, right, in our small groups, and that you had a chance to hear from one another personally as well. We'll keep these things in mind, what the messages are that we received, and what we did with some of these messages. How did we become or incorporate these messages into who we are? So Aida Hurtado is, as I said, a professor at the University of California, Santa Cruz, and she begins her book by talking about getting this job and how excited she was coming from migrant farm working family background. That's what her parents did, you know, that she kind of bucked some of these things. Girls don't get to go to college, things like that, to become a professor. And she got to be at this university. As you know, it's a great campus, part of one of the best university systems in the country. I went to one of those universities, that's why I know. But she talks about coming there and starting out as a professor and thinking, this is so great. She says, I really missed living in the barrio where I could get a good Mexican breakfast any day that I wanted. You know, I miss this, and I miss living in a Chicano community where there were people like me and, you know, things where I was comfortable with. But I was so appreciative of the opportunity to teach and to read and to learn and to share my ideas with others. She said, and then she got there, and the other women who were working there, she said they were privileged white women who were complaining that they were feeling disempowered or not appreciated, that their work was marginalized. And she just thought, you've got it all. How could you be complaining? So she said also that she had never considered herself, or she hadn't used the word feminist to describe herself. And maybe some of you have not either, but maybe that's sort of a new thing to try and even say. But in conversation then with her women colleagues, this reflection from her own experience and her interrelationship with her women colleagues gave birth to this. And she says, now I call myself a feminist because I understand more deeply what that means. So she begins then her exploration. She said, I felt like I was going to have to take care of these women and help them through this process of feeling subordinated. Oh, that's one word I didn't put up. So she begins by looking at the structural position of women in the United States. So it's very specific. We're not going to be talking about women in the whole world because that's another topic, another week. And so some of the things that she quotes are, you know, 70 cents on the dollar as far as the kind of wage that a woman receives, so there's definitely a differentiation there. About the educational level, you know, that came out clearly here. The roles that women are expected to fulfill, meaning the roles in society, so in elected positions representatively as well as in the roles in the marketplace or in the job market or in the family, who gets to make decisions. And she points out, especially in the areas of privilege and power. She makes the distinction to say, like when we say women make 70 cents on the dollar to men, we're using that as our example, that so often it's reported like that on the first headline. And then it's later, maybe even on the continuation on the next page, where you read, and black women make 40 cents on the dollar, or and Latinas make 30 cents on the dollar, and what's that difference there? So she suggests that part of the reason, and depending on how much you have read or been involved in or know about the feminist movement, there have been complaints from women of color that the issues of women of color have not been as recognized in the feminist movement. That, and when you think about who the writers are, especially historically, Gladys asked me about some of the early quotes are very early from the 60s, the 70s, and 80s, and my second answer is that there was a lot of writing. That was the Renaissance time of women, feminist writing, and women of color coming into their empowerment as far as having a voice. And so there's a lot of stuff from the early days, and there's a little bit less now. And this, I think there's a kind of the second wave is happening now in the 90s. So when you think of the women, Gloria Steinem and Betty Friedan and that whole group, you know, that it was upper class white women and they had different kinds of issues. So she suggests that it's because of our, meaning women's relationship to men, and particularly white men who have the most privilege and power in US society. So the concerns that that women have, let's make this a brown one, is not just to fight each other for, okay, I want to have 70 cents on the dollar too, right? But to say, how can it be that we all get a dollar's worth of pay for a dollar's worth of work? And so this, she's suggesting that it's how it is that we relate to white men that has impacted our relationship with one another. And her main suggestion in this first chapter is that white women have been in a seduction relationship with white men, while women of color have been in a rejection relationship. Okay, now we'll unpack that.
Who's being seducted?
Okay, who's being seduced? Right. Well, now, let me do my best to represent her, and then you can go back and read her chapter and see if I did how I did it, and you can also tear it apart a little bit more. But the idea is that men, white men in power, need to have a next generation. They need to have women who support them in their work so that they can work. As early as John Stuart Mill had a reflection on this, which I will read for you. John Stuart Mill observes, it was not sufficient for white women to be slaves. They must be willing slaves for the maintenance of patriarchal order. It depends upon the consensus of women. It depends on women playing their part, voluntarily suppressing the evidence that exposes the false and arbitrary nature of man-made categories and the reality which is built on those categories. So if men are gonna spend the whole day at the office, who's gonna make sure they have dinner, right? So how is it that people become available to have more free time to study, right? How many of you helped somebody else get through school, okay? We had a conversation in the last staff that I worked with, how many wives typed their husbands' dissertations? You know, and they were having this conversation, oh, it'd be so much easier now that we could do it on the computer. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, listen, there are 10 of you in this room who did this. You know, all your husbands have PhDs and all of you typed their dissertations. I mean, that's just a little small example, but that the system is set up that, you know, we need to have, in order for 2% of the population of the country to have more than 60% of the wealth, you know, there's gotta be a lot of cooperation going on that helps, you know, and most of those people are power men. Political power and privilege, as well as economic power and privilege. And so the reason the word seduction is used is what is you need to be willing to do that. You need to be a little bit compliant to those wishes. Yeah, I want to cook and have a nice dinner ready, because that's what a good girl does, you know? And besides, I get some satisfaction out of being able to do that. And I feel like I did a good job, those kinds of things. So how is it, those some of those messages that are there, how is it that each of these aspects of our lives have affirmed that as good things, as positive things? And so men, white men, have wanted to have positive relationships with white women, because they want to have children, to carry on their legacy, to receive their inheritance, those kinds of things as well. The rejection relationship with women of color, she points out the fact that all women of color, and she's making a point, so she says all, are in the United States basically against their will. All right, not right now. I'm choosing to be here, and I'm really glad. I was born here, and this is who I am. But that African-American people came as slaves. Japanese and Chinese immigrants came as indentured workers, or in, you know, some of the Chinese or Japanese families as picture brides, sent away to marry a man, you know, that they didn't even know. They came by conquest, because the United States took over part of Mexico and said, now it's Arizona, right? Or just all of the indigenous people of this whole hemisphere were taken over by conquest as well.
Wasn't that true of the whites, white women also? Didn't they come? Their husbands were coming, so they came, or their husbands, or their men.
Or, but they were their husbands.
Pardon?
They were their husbands.
But in some cases they weren't.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so yeah, it's true that some people came as male order brides, for example. There was that phenomenon as well. But or they came with their families, and then they stayed because they established themselves here. Mm-hmm. But as a group, that's the idea of let's see, this structural position. As a group, women, white women, voluntarily chose to be with white men, whereas women of color did not choose to be in that relationship. And so really, white men need to keep women of color in a position of then servitude. Okay, meaning, doesn't mean slavery only, but in some subordinated position. And I'll give example of this rejection phenomenon is the anti-miscegenation laws, meaning white people and people of color cannot marry, right? And so up until 1959 in the state of California, right? So my parents couldn't marry who they loved unless who they loved looked like them. Yeah. And that's still happening. If it's not on the law books, it's happening by cultural custom in many places still, right? So that's part of it. That was a legalized version of enforcing that separation. So that's good that you affirm that it's not absolute.
Yeah, well, I'm just thinking in terms of the white women co-opting with the white men. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we will...
Part of it is, what choices did you have? Right? Yeah, exactly. That's good. Okay. So, comments on that so far? I just gave you a big piece of cake, as it were, right? Something to chew on. Maybe a big piece of meat. Comments or reflections on that?
I was going to say that with white women... hanging with the white men, and you were talking about rewards, mm-hmm. for job well done. I think certainly there's a lot of vicarious status that can
exactly.
also come with
Thank
being
you.
With powerful white men.
Right.
You know, if that's the closest you can get to power,
right.
you can get it vicariously by choosing a spouse who's going to be a CEO or a doctor or a lawyer or someone's got money, and you can move up the power structure among other women at least.
Exactly. That's very, very good. And a point that she makes as well. It's very clear that about this marrying up thing, right? And it was an affirmation if you could do that. And that is exactly how a woman would marry well,
as
right?
They would choose that.
Yeah,
as they would choose that.
And a family would choose that too, because then the families status would get a little burnishing as well. Whereas in this relationship, it wouldn't necessarily, because children that came from this relationship would still have the characteristics of being biracial. And so then really second-class citizens still in our country. And so it might temporarily through association, but really in the long run, not. Good, thanks. Other comments about this?
How rapidly is that changing?
That's the whole part of our discussion, you know? We're part of that. I think for me, it was beginning to sort things out in this way so that it wasn't just all these different issues all clumped all together, but, all right, this is a way to order the information, order the understanding of being subordinated. So that's, let me put that. Now, I should have made this qualification at the very beginning. You know, I love men, so I really, and I'm really glad you're here in the workshop too, but so I don't want to say that this is against men, right? But it is the fact that that's how the system is organized. So our conversation here is with men and women, white and of color, so that we can talk about that and say, how do we change the structure of our relationships so that it's not dependent on somebody being oppressed? That's the whole thing, is that, was it Gladys, when you were coming in, you said, women are cooperative, right? Why would it be? I think there's been a little bit of this theme sort of running through all of the topics that have been addressed this week. Why does it need to be that somebody's first? You know, or why is it that if you have more money, it's better? I mean, these are just simple understandings that we haven't asked ourselves before. Does it really make you, what is the difference between the abundant life and the, right, consumption life? Just because you have, right? Yeah. So that's what the conversation is about, beginning to change those relationships. Other folks, responses to this idea about seduction and rejection?
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, there always has been another position that of the female in the U.S. So that's the ones that didn't marry.
Mm-hmm.
And a great percentage of them became teachers.
Okay, great.
We've had a teaching profession as, well, either you call it an escape or an alternative to being a slave to the male.
Great.
But were there any female principals or school superintendents? I mean, who hired you, who fired you, who was your boss?
Right. Yeah, that's what the glass ceiling is about, right? But this idea that you did have some choices, you could choose not to marry, and that's a really, really radical, or you could choose to delay it so that you got some of these things, like a college education, or you finished your high school education, right? And or you delayed childbearing so that you could have some of the experiences that would give you knowledge and background and those kinds of things. It's interesting, later in the book, she talks about folks who choose alternative lifestyles as a political statement, because it changes, it shifts the order within this structure of society that says good girls get married to good boys, you know? And I would suggest that this is part of why we're having this discussion about homosexuality today, because it changes the order of things. If women choose women to love, well then, where are men, you know? Or men choose other men. Part of this too is having certain men on top or in power is because if you are, where is it? If you're not a jock, you're a sissy. So it's not a neutral thing, it's bad, right? Instead of saying it's an option, you could be this or this or this. What was the other one about? Boys were expected to take the lead, I was shy and that was difficult. So part of it is there are expectations for what a manly man is. And it's manly men who get chosen the team leader and the president. And so if you have men who love men, what does that mean? That means that one of those men isn't being as manly a man as the other one, or something like that, something that begins to change our idea of power and privilege and who has the power or the privilege to make decisions, to tell other people what to do, to provide leadership, and especially in the area of spiritual life, right? Somehow we expect, there are a lot of messages about, like this, good. I keep picking on this one, but serving. Obviously, there's messages here about something about girlness does not equal acolyte, or girlness does not equal pastor. Why is that?
But doesn't serve mean both men and women?
Pardon?
Doesn't serve mean both in the church, mean both men and women?
Is that what the person wrote? Both men and women? Everybody serves? I was thinking it was sort of related to this other bread that was sort of like...
Yeah, that was how I was brought up. This is what, you teach Sunday school, you help with vacation Bible school, you do these things.
So it was a woman thing? It was a woman thing?
In my family, it was, because my brother didn't do anything.
Did he have the same expectations to do everything or do something?
No, but that was generally him to begin with. He thought everything was women's work. And since my dad left when we were, relatively young, my mother did everything.
Yeah.
So his expectation was women do everything, regardless of what she said to him.
Right.
He chose
what she demonstrated.
Yeah.
Okay. So that we have time for more discussion. Oh, Dale.
Can we rise above the instinctual process of animals where the female seeks the stronger male to assure that she has strong offspring?
Okay. Well, see, I think that may be a story that we have accepted as true. Right, I think about lions, right? And it's the woman who does all the hunting and brings bringing home dinner again. But the understanding that we had of all right, I was a biology major first, so this is why I'm gonna use this. That it was and Augustine and all our other friends in the church, right? That it was a woman was just like fallow ground and men planted seeds in women, and that's where children came from, because it was all really in the guy. And the semen was just little humans that needed to sprout up in some nice soil. But now we know that actually there's much more mutuality in that interaction. And in fact, the ovum sort of envelops the sperm, picks out a good one, as it were, to share some genetic material with. So what we understand, is it instinctual for us to select a good genetic mate based on survival because what it depends on how these values are incorporated in our selection process. Because if it is a value to have a tender and kind-hearted, generous spouse, whether or not they are really physically strong or extra tall or smart, really, really the smartest one, how do those values sort of even one another out? So that I think we need to examine those assumptions about we pick, but it goes along with what we've been doing, is we want to propagate the race, and the race needs to be strong and smart and all these other things that keep privilege and power. So I want to finish with this last thing so we have a chance to discuss it. When you asked, what do? The public-private conversation is especially where we can be active together. And you've heard it said that the personal is political. Have you heard that before? The personal is political. And that is that came out of the feminist movement, that the personal issues are political issues. So abortion, for example, what happens to my body in private and what my choice is, political issue. It needs to be something that the right to all of us agree. So a personal thing or a private thing has a public dimension. Whereas for women of color, there is a tendency where the political is personal. So if the state of California decides that English is the official language, it means that I can't get a ballot that I can read. Okay? Or if we decide there is no health care benefits for people who are immigrants, that means because I look like an immigrant, I fear whether or not I will get served. Carmen told a story about in her town, there was a 9-year-old girl who came to the hospital with an appendix infection. And they were scurrying around trying to figure it out. Does she have coverage? Where are her papers? Because she was a Mexican-American girl. And they saw her brown skin, her dark hair, and her dark eyes. And so they would not treat her. And she died right there. And Carmen said, I wish she were here to tell her story. She says, my daughter is 9 years old. She has no papers. She has no evidence of any insurance. You know, so she will live in the fear that the same thing will happen to her when she's at the park with her friend or something like that. Because the political is personal. The decisions we make on a corporate level impact us in a way. And it doesn't mean, I'm not saying that it's not both ways for all of us, but it tends to be that some of these bigger decisions that we make, there has been, in the last 10 years, a 150% increase in the legislation around immigration. Because as our country becomes more multicultural, we are making more legislation to control the distribution of all that color and the mixture of that.
Is that nationally or California?
No, that's federal legislation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So those are some of the topics I selected out of that first part. So just to bring out things to think about, some stimulating topics for discussion. Comments on that or questions? Reactions? Okay, what I'm going to do then is invite you to be back in your small groups again. All right, and you just give you 5 more minutes, okay, to do some reflection back and forth around these topics, okay? And then we'll come back together and close, all right? That's our 5-minute bell. I want to say one last thing. You're welcome to stay as long as you want. Actually, no, I think we should all go to the best person. But I want to bring this back to our theme for this summer about being heirs. Sorry, Colleen. Because that really is what this is about, right? About who can be heirs of whom and who decides. And when we look at our Galatians text 3, Galatians 3, 26 through 29, we have these groups, Jew and Greek, slave, free, male and female, that are representative of who it is that we're talking about right here in this room. When we sang that song yesterday, you know, look, think about these in broader terms. Jew and Greek, it's not just a religious, but it's a cultural, it's a race, it's an ethnicity distinction, where there's a privilege and power subordination there. The same with slave and free, it's an economic power and privilege subordination. If for male and female, it's a gender and a sexuality. One is more or better than the other, and who gets to decide? And what's really crucial, I put Colossians 3:11 here, because that's the other place where a writer in a biblical text says, these distinctions in Christ are gone. But very crucial is that in Colossians 3, which is a later text than Galatians, this one is missing. Because I would suggest that changing the gender and sexuality subordination system the way it is, the way it was then, the way it is now, is very threatening to those who have power and privilege. it's very threatening to the way things are, the established order, and the comfort that we have.
Well, and it was changed in the church. As far as the church back, went way back, that difference was not there for the early church Christians. But
somewhere between Galatians 3 and Colossians 3, it became very threatening.
Yeah.
Thanks. Well, everyone, thanks so much for being part of this. And let's continue conversation. I don't want to just say, okay, now I'm on tomorrow's boat, right? But let's keep talking. And I hope that, too, the village continues to have conversations, and that you ponder some of these things with your friends and your colleagues when you leave. Thanks so much.
Thank you.